The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
All right, now it's time to talk engineering, my favourite topic. And I'm joined by Eamon O'Reilly, Chair of the Energy and Climate Action Committee of the Irish Academy of Engineering. Good morning, Eamon, and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, you've released a report overnight on the prospect of using small modular nuclear reactors to bridge the gap. Now, explain, first of all, why we need to bridge the gap. We're talking about solar, we're talking about wind. Why not use all of that?
Well, certainly we should be using as much solar and wind as we can because that is zero carbon. But there is this fundamental issue of intermittency. It gets talked about very frequently. We all know it's there. And what intermittency is, at night time there's no solar, obviously. During the month of May, there would have been very little wind on some days.
Yeah.
So you need to have some technology that's going to back up
now,
your solar and your wind.
What we currently do, it's gas by and large. Still a bit of coal burning down in Moneypoint. That'll end. But it'll be gas. And that's a carbon. That's a fossil fuel. So we want to try and stop that. So there are alternatives. For example, they're talking about burning ammonia, which would be generated from wind power. They're talking about burning hydrogen, which would be generated from wind power. What's wrong with those ideas rather than nuclear?
There's nothing wrong with them as ideas. And what's tremendous is companies like ESB are doing a lot of investigation work into the feasibility. The key thing, though, Pat, is it is just not known whether these things are going to be feasible, these approaches will be feasible. If they turn out to be feasible, they might not be viable, i.e. they might be very, very expensive. So the purpose of our report today is to identify a weakness in energy policy in Ireland, that we're riding one horse, which may not get to the finishing line. And the view of the Academy is that we should be preparing for the possibility that hydrogen doesn't work as a means of backing up renewables.
Let's explain what the proposal is with hydrogen. It's basically using wind power, which we have an abundance off the West Coast. And when it blows hard, and we've got loads of wind energy, which we cannot use on the grid because we've got too much of it. So we divert some of that electrical power into creating hydrogen from water, I presume, or from some hydrocarbon.
Electrolysis.
Electrolysis, that's what you do. And then you store your hydrogen somewhere, and then you burn it, and it produces water when you burn it. That's the theory.
And that is a perfect concept. But you use the word somewhere. The question is, where is somewhere? So there is the ESB and others, indeed, are investigating the possibility of using the old Kinsale gas field. That may or may not work as a place to store large amounts of hydrogen. You have to get it out there. So you're going to have to put new pipes. So there's lots of...
So you actually create the hydrogen on land, do you, and then pipe it back out to the Kinsale field?
That seems to be what the concept is. I think ESB are also doing investigations, geological formations off Moneypoint and also off Dublin. So where those three locations actually are interesting, because those three locations correspond to where today you've got great big strong grid connections.
Yeah.
But it's just not known at this point, Pat, whether those will actually
now,
work.
Now, one of the other ideas would be to create ammonia, because ammonia might be easier to transport than hydrogen.
Yes, indeed. Ammonia can be transported by tankers worldwide. We have a lot of experience in Ireland with ammonia. The main use for natural gas when it first came ashore from Kinsale was to provide energy and feedstock into the Marina Point and the Arklow fertiliser plants. So yes, you can produce ammonia. Ammonia is a nasty substance to try to deal with, though. You don't want ammonia leaks. It is
Besides
hazardous.
Smelling, it is quite caustic.
It is very caustic. And you then run into issues as to where can you actually build such facilities. You wouldn't be allowed, I don't think, to build them, for example, in Dublin Port, where there's an awful lot of generation capacity at the moment because they have these COMA restrictions. So COMA restrictions from the old Seveso tragedy.
Yeah.
You cannot put things like ammonia where you have people
and
in reasonable location.
I mean, the plants, by and large, would probably stink. No matter how good you are at containing the ammonia within the plant, they would stink. So no one will want to live beside an ammonia plant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But,
okay,
but nonetheless, Bord Gáis Éireann are in a joint venture, I think it is, with Mitsubishi to work out the feasibility of running Whitegate. They have a gas turbine down there on ammonia.
Okay, but that's kind of all contained within the existing site of Whitegate.
In that vicinity.
So these are alternatives to the small modular nuclear reactors. But at the moment, we can't, by law, build nuclear reactors.
Correct. There's two pieces of law which prevent nuclear fission in Ireland. One is the CRU, the Commission for the Regulation of Utilities, is explicitly forbidden to license such a plant. And no planning authority in Ireland, be it a local authority or in Bord Pleanála, can give planning permission for one. So those are the legal obstacles. And I think the issue that comes out of those legal obstacles, Pat, is that there is no evidence. In fact, people are quite explicit within the likes of Airgrid. They've recently published tomorrow's Energy Scenarios 2023 report. And they explicitly say they did not include any possibility of nuclear because it's illegal in Ireland.
Yeah.
So what we're saying in the Academy is that Ireland should be preparing for the possibility of small modular reactors in case we end up needing them or we find ourselves in a bind.
Now, talk to me about, before we talk about the technology of the small modular nuclear reactor, talk about the output. Compared to a classic gas turbine that's burning down in Dublin Port, what is the output?
The top 10 generating units in the country have an average output of 378 megawatts, 378 megawatts. That is thereabouts the size of many of the SMRs that are being proposed by the likes of GE, Hitachi, Rolls-Royce are actually a bit bigger, and other such companies.
Okay, so that one of these would replace those 10 facilities. How many would we need for the whole country?
We wouldn't put a figure on how many we might need. One or two certainly would not be enough. In the report, we use a figure for maximum demand in Ireland of about 12,000 megawatts by 2050. Today, that's at about 5,500.
Okay, so we're talking about a more than doubling of the demand because certain things like people who burn oil or gas in their central heating, they won't be doing that anymore in 2050. It'll all be electric.
Yes, so we're seeing huge electrification of heat is envisaged and it has started, albeit slowly, and huge electrification of transport. So we need an awful lot more electricity. That pushes up the demand level. You're at 12,000 megawatts compared to 5,500 today. So one or two small modular reactors wouldn't make much impact at all. But we wouldn't suggest what the number might be. This requires a lot of detailed work. And it's precisely that detailed work we're recommending should be starting today, notwithstanding the restrictions of law on nuclear energy.
Now, people who've seen pictures of major nuclear power stations, they're huge things. And, you know, in Ukraine, where we've been watching the war unfold, huge ponds for tailings and all the rest of it, which are toxic. What is involved in the small nuclear reactor? How big a site would you need for one?
Obviously, the promoters of small modular reactors are putting their best foot forward and they put up nice images of what one might look like. So they're suggesting a land area for a small modular reactor of about the size of a football pitch. So less than a hectare. Okay. Within the report, we do actually have a couple of paragraphs where, just to give a sense of how these things might be used in Ireland, you could imagine repowering Money Point, for example, with three or four SMRs.
Okay, so you'd use the fact that Money Point is connected really well to the grid means you have a way of distributing your power. And this is a site that's already, if you like, an industrial site.
Absolutely. And you could even envisage the existing steam turbines, alternators, switchgear, all of that side of it being used. Now, we do advisedly use the word imagine that.
Yeah.
So we're not suggesting this is what absolutely should happen.
No, because people would want the new spec, wouldn't they, for everything? The latest turbine, you know, to get the maximum efficiencies from
their.
Okay, so you might have three or four in Money Point with a considerable output then there. If each one was, say, 400 megawatts, if you're four or five down there, you've got 2,000 megawatts available from Money Point.
If you're four or 300, you're at 1,200 megawatts. The original proposal of Money Point was for about 1,200 megawatts. There's three units there at the moment. It was actually built with a view to putting a fourth in. That never went in because it was built in the early 80s. My memory of the early 80s was just after I came out of college. The Irish economy went off a cliff. So that fourth unit was never built.
Okay, now the technology, is it tried and tested?
It is tried and tested. Nuclear power has been working for about seven decades. So something like, if I have my figures correct, 437 nuclear reactors producing electricity at the moment. 71% of them are pressurized water reactors. Most of the proposed SMRs are based on pressurized water reactor technology. So you have a technology
that's fully understood.
Fully understood and has been working for, let's say it's been working for 70 years, the guts of 70 years, Pat.
Now, the term modular, what does that mean in the context of a nuclear reactor?
Everybody will be aware that large nuclear power plants, such as the Hinkley Point C, yeah, under construction, they tend to be much more expensive in the end than anybody thought they were ever going to be. They tend to take an awful lot longer to build. You have these mega project problems, yeah, with
and
them.
Each one is bespoke.
Each one is bespoke. They're reinventing the wheel every single time almost, yeah, because the length of time between one unit being built and another unit being built, the workforce you've assembled for the first one have probably gone off doing different things in the meantime.
So with modular, are we talking like modular homes that are built in a factory by and large?
Yeah, the way I envisage it, Pat, and reading what the promoters are saying, I think it could end up in a little bit like the commercial aviation sector. Commercial aviation, you've got two great big companies, Boeing and Airbus. So you might have two or three companies, if the technology succeeds, yeah, we don't know whether it will or not. That is uncertain, as all of the other alternatives are uncertain. So I envisage that there would be a small number of manufacturers of these things. They're producing multiple units. You're not talking about thousands, yeah, in a year. You're talking about tens in a year per factory, or maybe 100 per year in a factory.
Okay, but the only difference might be, in the same way as you order a plane, I want my seats in the Ryanair colours or I want my seats in the Aer Lingus colours.
That's the way it would have to work if the promise of the SMR promoters is actually going to deliver.
How many of them are actually working now out there?
Out there, that's a really good question. It's close to zero. There's one in China, which is pretty close to being the first to be energized. So there's an awful lot of talk, but there's the key thing though, Pat, I think to remember is that there's an awful lot of effort going into it. France, for example, got state aid clearance from the European Union to put 300 million euros into EDF, the state-owned electricity, yeah, company, to develop them. In Britain, they're running a very active process where they've narrowed down to six companies who might produce them. One of them is Rolls-Royce, another is GE Hitachi, EDF are there, and three others. Shortly, they're going to reduce that down to four, and then the government are actually going to be giving money to the companies, as I understand it, to bring their designs to completion, to get through that whole regulatory process. So there's an awful lot of work. In fact, when you think about the nuclear industry, and I mentioned the aircraft industry, there's great similarities. There is enormous dedication to the detail of design and quality.
And safety.
And safety, 100%.
The question then of getting these on stream, we've got to wait till someone comes up with the modular model that we might purchase, because we would be a customer. We're not going to be a technology leader here. You know the complaints about us that we didn't do it on wind. We could have been a leader in wind, but we're not. Scotland is ahead of us. Denmark is ahead of us. I'm sure in the Far East there are loads of people who are ahead of us. But we were never going to be a leader in nuclear engineering.
We were never going to be a leader. No, we are by and large a technology taker. And sometimes, unfortunately, we take the technology much later than we should have. Eddie O'Connor built the Arklow Phase 1, 24 megawatts, about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
We still don't have another turbine today in 2024 offshore. So sometimes we move far too slowly. The core of our report and the recommendation is, let's not make a similar mistake now with SMRs in case we end up having to depend on them.
So we should be planning as to where they might be located if we, first of all, change the law, then plan where they might be located for grid connections and so on.
I don't even think you need to change the law. There's a great example in what Estonia is doing. Estonia is a country of 1.2 million people. Most of their electricity comes from coal and oil. And I think after the Ukrainian war began, they had to turn to local shale oil. Very dirty stuff.
Yeah.
So they've got a very high amount of carbon per kilowatt hour coming out by comparison to wild. In April 2021, they set up a working group, NEPIO, I think it was called, Nuclear Energy Policy Implementation Officer, some such thing. They've now got to the point in Estonia, where they're about to bring into the Estonian parliament the legislation necessary to set up the Estonian Nuclear Regulatory Authority. Okay, we don't need to change the law in Ireland. What's really important was that we do begin work so that as the crisis of not hitting our targets, and every year the EPA tell us we failed again, as we get on and on towards 2050, the big decision is going to have to be taken. What route are we going to go if the options we're currently pursuing don't work? We need to be ready to take the options. At that stage, we need a very detailed and informed debate and discussion with the Irish public.
What about the cost per megawatt? Because at the end of the day, that's what people will be looking at. Now, obviously, carbon is going to get more and more expensive to burn. People will still be burning carbon, I suspect, in 2050, but they'll be paying through the nose for the privilege of doing that. So in terms of the alternatives, the wind, the solar versus nuclear versus burning biomass or biogas or whatever it might be, how does it compare?
It's too early to say what the figures will be, but there's one very interesting comparison I'll give you. Hinkley Point C, when it got a strike price agreed with in the British market at £95.20 per megawatt hour. That was at 2012 prices. So £95.20 at that time seemed enormously expensive.
Yeah.
And that is escalating. So in Britain, they have the allocation round six auction process about to happen, where they're looking for people to bid, for example, for floating offshore wind, fixed bottom on yeah. offshore wind and onshore wind and so on. And they set a maximum price. The maximum price they've set in the UK for this round of auctions for floating offshore is £176 sterling.
So they anticipate that the price of floating offshore is going to be very high.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
It's early days for floating. But the key point, though, to take from that is that the prices might look very expensive today. But if you take a decision today based on what you think the price is, you might turn out to be badly wrong. For example, on top of all of the price of all of the renewable energy we'll have, you have to add in the price of the backup.
Yeah.
And nobody adds that in. That doesn't fall to the account.
So if you're talking about solar and wind and don't take account of what it's going to cost, what do you call it? Non-synchronous and synchronous power. Synchronous being what you can turn on the tap and it's there. And non-synchronous is the wind and the solar.
Yeah, the synchronous is the traditional stuff. Steam yeah. turbines, gas turbines and so on. Wind turbines are non-synchronous. Batteries are non-synchronous. Interconnectors actually are non-synchronous. Solar is non-synchronous. So there's a remarkable job has been done in Ireland by Airgrid, and maybe not enough people give Airgrid the credit. We now have up to 75% of our power at a given point in time produced by non-synchronous sources. Airgrid are world leading and they're moving towards 100%. They will yeah. get there. But that's great.
But that's when the wind is blowing and all of that.
You took my next line from me. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So even with the best will in the world, the best balancing of the grid, which Airgrid are doing so well, when the wind stops blowing, they're kiboshed.
Correct. And the sort of things you think of, could you use batteries? Well, I don't think you can use batteries. We have a figure in the report about 1,000 billion if you wanted to have enough batteries in the system to give you 30 days of electricity. Mm. And you need to be thinking those sorts of terms. We need backup for long periods. May would have been a dreadful month if we didn't have gas, for example. Yeah.
Now, what about things like the carbon going into the building of these modular reactors? You know, everyone talks about concrete, and even if you're using EcoSem to build, there's still a certain amount of carbon in all that concrete that is required for a power station, be it modular or be it bespoke.
Yeah, in the report we include some analysis by Our World and Data from the fantastic Hannah Ritchie, and in that it shows both the safety and the sustainability of different types of power technology. Solar seems to be the very best when it comes to embedded carbon and so on, but wind and nuclear are in and around the same. The key thing about the nuclear is whatever carbon you're putting in, you're getting an awful lot of energy out over an awful long period.
Okay, safety.
Safety is a key concern. But when this is why we need to get this work starting now, so there can be an informed debate and discussion. We're going to have to look at nuclear safety alongside the impact of not reaching carbon targets.
And the other technology that's coming is molten salt technology, which is utterly safe.
Yeah, well, we quote the example of the Bill Gates-backed TerraPower. They have a reactor called the Natrium reactor that uses liquid sodium mm-hmm. as the coolant. But they also have the provision with molten salts to store a huge amount of heat and boost the power output for short periods. It's a little bit like a molten salt Turlakill, if you like.
Anyway, today is the day to start that conversation.
Today's the day to start that conversation.
Is your report, which is a significant piece of work, is it available online for people
to access?
It's
available. It'll be available in and around now. Irish Academy of Engineering, iae.ie.
Eamon O'Reilly, who's chair of the Energy and Climate Action Committee of the Irish Academy of Engineering. Eamon, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.